Right, we'll reconvene and move on to item 10.1, Chairperson's report. Take it as read, other than acknowledge that Mr. Budecker and I will be meeting with Fonterra in early October. I think we've got a date confirmed this week in the year. Over their 50 catchments program, pardon me. You can see that RSG was hosted in Auckland by Fonterra, and specifically to deal with this topic, they made the announcement some time ago, but there was no detail sitting behind it at all. So other than that, under other meetings attended, just acknowledged the meeting we had with some Outram residents, which has raised an issue that we need to follow up as a reminder, particularly in light of long-term plan building and with respect to sewage treatment or lack thereof in Outram.
Can I ask a question on that, Mr. Chair, when it's appropriate?
Yeah, no, and open the report up for questions.
Fine. Hey, just with regards to Outram, I was trying to understand, because I heard your comment the other day, which probably wasn't in the public arena, but about the aquifers out there and meeting the water plan standards, and I sort of got the impression that unless there was a reticulated wastewater scheme for Outram, the standards couldn't be met. So I'm just thinking, are we absolutely certain that there's not technology out there that could meet the water plan standards by way of, when I talk about technology, I'm just the modern septic tank or the modern wastewater treatment on-site individual residential unit type regime, because we've come a long way since the original, you know.
I can't answer that.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not sure we'll be in a position today to meet it.
No.
I think some of the section sizes are too small.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I think they're all too small, because our own report said they need to be 3,000 square metres.
So it's res 5 out there, so 1,000 squares. So that's the town that's being surveyed like that. Yes. So why I'm asking those questions is that if you look back over time, this council, I'll say our council, has issued consents for septic tanks year in, year out on these 1,000 square sections.
Correct.
So I'm trying to now think, if we're moving to anticipating that these systems will not meet the water plan and promoting a reticulated network, I'm just trying to understand how that all lines up. You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah. I do.
But if we need to have a discussion at a later date,
I think we do need to have a discussion in a workshop at a later date to actually understand it, because you've got there was a rule change at one point.
Yep.
And so you've got old existing single chamber, and in some cases some other designs that are Outram specific, and then you've got some modern on some new properties that have been consented, so you've got an inequity in the community. And longer term, my understanding was we were always going to be linking to some system somewhere, you know, maybe capturing the grey water and sending it to Allenton to whatever. But anyway, I just want to note that, and it's something that we need to discuss with the city.
Thank
Councillor
you.
Scott.
I mean, it's a really interesting topic, and I suppose I should firstly declare that I have a septic tank. But this is where the rubber meets the road in terms of the urban water quality, in terms of setting up a strategy. But this is working with the TAs to see how it all works.
Yep.
And recently, for example, in Clyde, because they're looking at, you know, developments and so forth, this council has forwarded to the mayor information in terms of scientific reports on discharge and its impact on the groundwater and so forth. But not all places will be like Clyde and Outram and so forth. There will be, you know, of course, all the other towns that, or coastal communities, or are communities where residents may be on small size and mightn't have any other choices other than septic tanks. So there's still some work to be done in this area.
Oh, yes. Yes. But this was just a specific issue that was raised around consent renewal in Outram.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to report on that, and there is a bigger issue sitting behind it. Councillor Brown, did you have your finger up?
Another subject, is that all right?
Yeah, that's fine.
Just back to your comment about the Fonterra 50 catchments program. So they've given no indication as to what they're actually going to be doing with this program?
No.
Well, I think it's very important that we should be up front and collaborate with them, because we need all hands to the pump with this. And
yes.
If they bring a different angle to it, it's got to be good.
No, and I asked them in Auckland specifically, are you prepared to work with existing catchment groups and programs?
Yep.
Yeah, Pomahaka, for example, and some of their staff were understood that project. Yes. And so they want to collaborate, and very happy to. They won't necessarily fund work across the whole catchment. They might focus on the dairy part or whatever, but yes, they're very happy to work with. And so there's a wee bit of a scramble that's probably being a bit strong with, we want five catchments in Southland and Otago doesn't need any, and then Waikato, etc. So we're just going to work through them with individual... as individual councils with Fonterra, and understanding where the focus is.
I think the thing about it too, the timing is good, given that the industry is becoming more buoyant again, because
correct.
Farmers have only got so much discretionary income, and if things correct. Are buoyant again, hopefully they can make more progress.
And some industry leadership.
Mm.
Yeah. All right, Councillor Hope.
Just two things through the chair. Outram's also on mains pressure too, and that has been a problem, because a lot of those tanks were much more. Just going back to what you asked Councillor Moon, we're my old hat, we experienced a lot of problems with that too, much more chambers. Second thing, can I ask you please, through the chair, I was reading about the stormwater management catchment, and I just want to ask you, examples include rain gardens capturing runoff from roads, the replenishment of groundwaters and peat.
Yes.
And the regulated ponds to recapture runoff. Have they said to you what happens if they have overflow or they have too much water? You know, did they give an example, or they haven't quite come to that?
There was a wee bit of discussion on that. The local rain garden or off to the side of the road was all reasonably small scale, so it could handle, it was one here and one 200 metres down the street sort of thing. But we did visit did I name the suburb? Can't remember the name of it now. Where it had been growing over a number of years, a decade or more, and their initial plans for stormwater control, which was the old pond based, were not. They wouldn't have done it that way if they start again now, and so they're endeavouring to amend things a bit. But well, Auckland has a pretty substantial rainfall, so their initial infrastructure needs to be designed to handle it, I suppose. But I was pleased to see the scale of the stormwater management that was being undertaken in the new suburbs, because clearly the place is growing pretty rapidly. It still begs a multi-billion-dollar question about retrofitting the existing, but... And they had houses, brand new houses. The land was $400,000, I think, for a 700 square metre section. The house was $400,000 on top of peat. And that's why they were, because if you drain peat, it sinks, sometimes feet. And so they were ensuring that the groundwater level was maintained to keep the peat. Well, surprised me a wee bit. Anyway, we'll see longer term. All right. I'm pretty keen to push through the agenda and be reasonably crisp this afternoon, because we've got some workshops to get on with. We'll move to the Chief Executive's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Take it as read. Just highlighting the Emergency Management Otago, this is a report to give you a detailed update of where we are with that. I'm very happy with the progress. A lot of work being done. They are shoulder to the wheel. They've got their staff, they've got their structures, and they are out engaging with their communities. Regional Economic Development, you'll see there a report of the meeting that I was asked to attend from the Mayoral Forum. The MB guys, it would be fair to say, can't see any big issues for Otago as they have in other regions. However, they said, let's have a look at some of the more unique and perhaps boutique issues. I've talked about Lake Snow, I've talked about air quality. They didn't say no when we had that discussion. Early days, high level, but I think we can think perhaps things that are a little more unique to Otago. Connecting Dunedin, a number of you got a flavour of that At the briefing we had with the Dunedin City Council before the second day of our committee round, and the annual report from Health and Safety is my final number five, and you'll see the significant that we had zero notifiable events and essentially 14 injury accidents, of which 10 of them were significant. Sorry, 10 of them were minor, a couple of them significant, and another one minor. So that's a good outcome. We are focused on health and safety. We have a very active staff health and safety committee. Health and safety is raised at the executive meeting on a monthly basis, and of course reports to audit and risk. Item six is the Environmental Enhancement Fund report. So this was one of the first grants that we made to the Career Era evaluation benchmarking group, and you'll see that their report is of good progress. It's year one of three. Queenstown office, I have approved a one of the two sites that I noted there yesterday. So we are in the phase of working through the setup and the final contracting for that Queenstown site, and then we'll work our way through exactly what staff groups are going to be in that. Obviously, there's some interim thinking going on already, but that will be able to be finalised now that we've got a building.
Great questions in the Chief Executive's report. Everybody comfortable? Good, good, comprehensive report, Peter, and good to see the annual health and safety up there. Thank you. All right, I'll move that the Chair and Chief Executive's reports are received. Seconded, Councillor Deaker. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Yes, carried. Thank you. On to item 11.3, the schedule of ordinary council and committee meetings, page 19 on your agendas.
I'll move the recommendation.
Everybody comfortable there, Mr. Donnelly? Nothing?
No, I think it's fairly self-explanatory.
Self-explanatory, business as usual. Moved Councillor Noon, seconded Councillor Hope. Put it, all in favour, please say aye. Against, carried, thank you. Matters for noting, investment report, page 21. Oh, my apologies, yes, and I've got it right in front of me too. We'll just go back a step, I'm sorry. Item 11.4 we added into our agenda this morning, which is the Urban Water Quality Strategy. And we have the staff with us, and Sylvie and Dale. So you'll just have to take a moment to find that on your iPads, or some have a hard copy, it would appear. Let me see if I can. There we go. Brilliant. So this is the final version of the Urban Water Quality Strategy. Excuse me. You all understand the process that it has been through. And Sylvie, Dale, any comments you wish to make?
By the Chair, we're just pleased to have this urban water quality strategy presented to you. We hope you enjoy reading it, and we look very much forward to working with you and with the TAs and the MPTA in terms of moving on to implementation.
Thank you, Dale. All right, comments. Councillor Scott.
My understanding that there were four things that had to be addressed in this update. The first one was to make it clear that we'll improve water quality when it is not good but not quite degraded yet. So they talked about promoting and enabling appropriate behaviour. And I think that's on 2.2, Dale and Sylvie. Is that right? Maybe I've got that wrong.
The issue that I think we were looking to address last year was set out on pages
second and 11 under maintaining good or excellent water quality, which has the header ensuring no degradation of water quality, and then improving water quality where it does not meet community expectations. So that those sections were rephrased to make it clear that we are looking to achieve good or excellent. If it's a little bit below, we're still wanting to get it up to good, and if it's significantly below, then we're looking at some more of those rehabilitation programs to improve situation.
And through the chair, the next one was enhanced recognition of citizen science, for example, through addition of community in section 4.4.2. And I think that you've simply just inserted that, haven't you? Risks and the community involved through citizen science initiatives.
Yep.
The one I couldn't find was to acknowledge more explicitly the link between water quality and quantity regarding stormwater in urban catchments. And I'd appreciate it if you respond to that one. But the final one was, following Councillor Decker's comments, to review the grammar throughout the document. And you'd need a better pair of eyes than mine to do that. So I assume that that's okay as well. Thank you.
Yep. Been through a process. Yep. Good. The link between quality and quantity.
Yeah.
Ladies?
Page 17, promoting and enabling appropriate behavior. We added a bullet point saying that we would have regard to flooding and erosion control. It was really around stormwater and the link between water quality and water quantity.
So on page 17?
Page 17.
Whereabouts on page 17?
So the last bullet point, having regard to flooding and erosion control.
The right hand side, down the bottom?
Yes.
Under the heading is promoting and enabling appropriate behaviour. And the last bullet point they've added in regard to flooding and erosion control.
All right. That's my page 17 there. What's that? Oh, is that what that is? Having regard to flooding and erosion control, what's that got to do with the link between water quantity and water quality?
That change was made because the examples that were given related to stream management in Queenstown, so it was very much a flood control issue.
Somebody raised this issue, not me. Who raised this issue?
It was Councillor Lawton, wasn't it?
Councillor Lawton, then.
We had quite a discussion about it prior to the last
And the point that's written down here was to acknowledge more explicitly the link between water quality and quantity. And
I recall that as being, it was a question of delaying the release of water to rivers, to harbours and so on. That is, and the more you could delay it, the better quality it would be, because there would be less disturbance, less sediment, less this, less that. That I recall that was
okay.
The way that discussion shaped.
So is it actually covered through the chair? Is that actually covered in the words that are here then, between flooding and erosion or something like that? Is it? In regard to flooding and erosion control.
So that sort of covers off from the last reports,
yes.
Those kind of features,
yep.
Urban features and so on,
yep.
That will hold water a little longer.
Isn't it?
I think it's more than just flooding and erosion, though. It's also the treatment, like retaining it for treatment purposes as well.
Yeah.
So you mean Councillor Robinson, like it seals out, do you mean like it, so you know, you might have a holding chamber and it settles it?
Anything like that, wood chips, gravel, you know that.
Yeah.
Is that captured anywhere else, ladies?
If you look at the paragraph as a whole under promoting and enabling appropriate behaviour, it makes the comment or gives examples of water sensitive urban design, beneficial reuse of contaminants.
Yes.
There are examples of how you can minimise the quantity of contaminants entering.
Okay.
We weren't looking to go into specific details.
Yeah.
At the strategy level.
Remembering it's a strategy, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alan.
And what a sensitive urban design. I mean,
yeah, exactly. So it's there, and then there's the bullet points.
Yep, thank
so,
you.
So, yeah.
Thank right you. Right.
Good. Councillor Deaker.
Yeah, I was looking for the bite in this document. What's its status in terms of regulation, setting bylaws? When you read this, it's almost every fifth paragraph says by working together, da 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 da, and that's fine. That's a nice wee theme that goes through it. The word collaboration is used an awful lot, and it seems to me, if you look at the diagram on page 7, that this plan will be achieved by collaboration and working together. But does it have actually any bite at all?
No, it's high-level principles being agreed on in a strategic document that will inform plan changes that have the bite.
Whose plan changes?
Ours.
Nobody else's.
Ms. Meredith?
The intention is, by the chair, that we will, with our territorial authority colleagues, look at what appropriate changes need to be made to, for example, the water plan or the district plans, for example, around subdivision controls,
yes,
which will ensure that we do get good water quality outcomes.
Yeah. Mr. Bodica?
Yeah, so I was going to repeat that. I mean, it will inform the territorial's documents, bylaws if appropriate, but it's certainly the district plans. That's the intent.
Councillor
Laws. So, to answer Michael's question in specific, there's not intended to be any bite in here.
No.
This is essentially a consultation agreement with the TAs leading to the drawing up of plans, which is where the bite would occur.
Correct.
Is
correct.
That right?
Correct.
Thank you.
But always important to have had these early conversations that informed the strategy and an agreed strategy that we've got the principles of what we're trying to achieve locked in and agreed.
Okay, so if I was a member of the Central Otago District Council,
yes,
and I was looking at the water in the Alexandra, Cromwell, Clyde area, thinking, how do I achieve the very best? I'd look at this for a bit of inspiration and to see where the region had got to in terms of collaborative discussions. But I'd actually also have to look at the RPS, wouldn't I, to see what is actually expected of us, because they have to make good out of what the RPS says about water quality. Has anybody checked the absolute consistency between this and what the RPS says?
Meredith, are you able to?
By the chair, the regional, or the proposed regional policy statement, of course, is still subject to appeal. We're working through mediation, but the provisions relating to water and water quality are consistent, to my mind, with what is set out in this strategic document, which was, we are looking to maintain water quality as good or excellent, and where it is degraded, we are looking to improve it.
Well, that's comforting. So long as that, yeah. Okay, I'm just hoping we've got all our water messages as pure as the driven snow.
Yeah. Councillor Hope?
Oh, no, sorry, I apologise.
Councillor Scott?
I'm responding to that. My understanding, correct me through the chair, Darlene, Sylvie and Suzanne, the key document that I think TAs will be looking at won't necessarily be this or the RPS. I'm assuming it'll be our updated water plan that has the teeth in it. Am I right in that? Through the chair, staff?
Yep.
By the chair, the implementation program for this strategy is being developed at the moment.
Yeah.
And will be worked through with council as part of their long-term planning work.
Yeah.
There is an expectation that there will be, and this does arise from the forums that we held with TAs and EE, that there will be some form of governance or oversight entity between the main agencies, which will then pull together a work program across the region, which they will basically be checking each other to ensure that each is doing their best to push towards
But if the document that's got the teeth is our updated water plan, then that's when the rubber hits the road and a little bit of attention is required, that'll be the document, yeah?
That will, in terms of the regulatory enforcement approach.
Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you.
Councillor Robinson?
Well, I think it's a really good document.
Mm.
I think it is punchy, and I really like the way it's been laid out now as well. I think you pick it up and you know exactly what we're aiming for. And often it's not the piece of paper that's as important as the process you went through to get to the bit of paper as well, and I think that's really the key thing. This is the product at the end of it. But we've developed some really good relationships with all of our TAs over the development of this strategy. So well done, everybody. Well done, Councillor Scott, in bringing all this together. But even more so, well done to all the staff, Peter, everybody, who's worked so hard on this. I think it's looking in really good shape. We've all had our say on it, as have our stakeholders, and it's looking good.
Yeah, thank you. And I was going to acknowledge that. A very robust process and two good workshops with all our stakeholders. And yes, the sticky bit will come later. And those conversations have already been had at those workshops and understanding. But I think it's crucial that we have these principles that we're anchored to. And we move away to the next step. So I also like the layout. Good. Any other comments? Councillor Hope.
I do have it
this
now.
Time.
I was thinking of what to say. And I'd like to endorse what Councillor Robinson said, and for you too, Councillor Scott. I think you've done a great job at pushing this forward, and we've got very conscientious and diligent staff. And I know they knew they were under pressure to have this delivered to us, and they did it, but they also took away what we said about water quantity, quality. You know, there's a bit of toing and froing, but I think it's a very good document. Thank you for doing it.
Great. Councillor Scott, would you like to move that Council adopts the Urban Water Quality Strategy?
I would actually like somebody else to do it. If people really like it, then they can move. If they don't, let's have do some more work on it. I'm not going to push it.
Councillor Noon?
More than happy to move. And in moving, just acknowledge, as others have already alluded to, these sorts of documents are very, very important to set the standard for others to lift their game. And when I say others, I'm talking TLAs, so well done.
Good. Seconded, Councillor Deeker. No further discussion. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you. Thank you, Sylvie. Good work.
Thanks, Dale.
All right. This time, 12.1, Investment Report, page 21 of your agendas. You'll have to pop back to your agenda.
We've got this modern way now. We can go for it.
Just oh, you can touch now. On, yes.
Or you no, can, that it's cool, ain't
you? Or you can,
that's really
can
good.
Go to page 21 at the top and kaboomfa. All right, Mr. Donnelly, do you want to give us an overview of this paper, please?
So this is a summary report that we've prepared. It actually went to Audit and Risk last week to their meeting, for their input on this becoming a public investment report that would come to council periodically. I think we sort of settled on 6 months, as opposed to in Audit and Risk there is quite a detailed compliance type report that BNZ offer on the managed fund, and it's only on the managed fund, whereas this report here is giving a summary of our cash investments, being the term deposits that we fund, that we have through the multi-bank scheme that we operate, and the managed fund that BNZ manages on our behalf. So it gives a summary of both of those, the short-term and long-term investments, and just gives information on the amounts that we are holding in each and the performance for the year to 30 June.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's a good report. We haven't done this before, I don't think, so it puts it out there. If anyone wants to know, we're up front with it.
Great. Does the Lords?
It does indeed. I asked for this, so it's great. In fact, to the audit and risk report, went to where all our investments are. So that will be the next task, is to work through the ethical investing concepts there. But I'm interested in the very, very heavy reliance upon New Zealand fixed interest in terms of our investments, to the point where we're actually oversubscribed at the moment. New Zealand fixed interest would, as everybody knows, be the worst investment you could probably make at the moment. It seems so heavily weighted that have we had the discussion around here as to investment strategy?
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. When did we do that?
Are you referring to in the managed fund? Or
no, in the portfolio summary, the percentage.
Of the managed fund, not the overall, because the other, the short term is all in fixed interest.
Yeah.
So in the actual managed fund.
Yeah.
That the current weighting that we have, and if you look at our SIPO, the Statement of Investment Policies and Objectives, we have 40% would be weighted towards New Zealand fixed interest. So we did through audit and risk, there was a comprehensive review done of that. Of our SIPO and our treasury management policy, and part of the rationale for that is that this portfolio still has a requirement to generate cash. If it was all weighted towards growth assets, being equities, although there'll be some dividend income, a lot of your income will be focused on capital gain. So out of that review and based on council's risk profile, this was determined as the appropriate strategy to have for the weightings of our investments.
Right, so but if I'm looking at the column on the left is where we've got our money now.
Yep.
And the column on the right under CPO allegation is presumably where we intend to get. Is that correct or not?
Yes, that's where the percentage should be. And I will, so I will state there that that you could see there that, so as at June, we were at almost 45%. As the SIPO allocation was 40%, just before the end of June, we finalised the revision to the SIPO, which previously our fixed interest allocation had been higher, and it dropped back slightly to the 40%. So we were overweighted because BNZ hadn't completed the transactions to balance the portfolio. I think the comments made there that they did that subsequent to year end, and by I think it was 16 August, they provided us a report to state that the portfolio was balanced with the SIPO asset allocations.
So as of today,
yep,
yes,
though that SIPO allocation is roughly where our investments sit.
Yes.
Okay, so is that generating? Is that anticipated to generate additional income over the next this current financial year?
Additional income in what
well, given
respect?
It's a measure by choice.
One presumes that the column on the left-hand side was following Otago Regional Council investment policy, correct?
Yes, at the time,
And we've moved now to a new allocation policy.
Yes.
What I guess I'm asking is, that having, we're now, what, June, July, August, September, yes, end of September, roughly, have we looked at the amount that we are now allocating and worked out from that whether or not there is additional revenue budgeted for as a consequence of moving that investment?
It will be slightly higher. Previously, there was roughly a 60-40 split, to so 60% income generating versus 40% growth. So 60% of it was in basically your cash assets, income that are income generating. The new SIPO has 50-50, so it's moved slightly, and that will generate a slightly higher return
and higher risk.
And slightly higher risk, but it's you're talking about moving from 60-40 to 50-50. It's not a massive quantum change, but it has just repositioned us slightly. Yep.
Thank you,
Justice Scott.
Yeah, just following on from that, I mean, 34,200,000 in a multi-bank portfolio on term deposit is a hell of a lot. And I look forward to the discussion maybe in terms of the LTP, because, you know, like, we make comments in terms of the return of the port and so forth, and in terms of our own investments, we are conservative. Just whether we are, without being reckless, whether there are ways of optimising that, you know, and for example, through our vehicle, Chalmers Property, you know, should there be another Hamilton on the horizon or something? Because, I know you've analysed it, but is that a reason? That's your 45%, yeah?
No, no, the 34 million that you're talking about is outside of the managed fund. So the management fund is a long-term investment fund. You
which
know,
is
you,
about,
once it's
sorry, a, about 10 million.
No, it's 19 million.
Plus one, the 34.
Yeah, plus the 34, which is short-term. Now, the 34, potentially it is a bit higher, but you do have in there, we do have 14 million that we're holding, which is in
the building.
Building reserve. Because once... And you could say, why not move that into the managed fund long term? But long term needs to take a, you know, 3+ year horizon. And ideally, once you've got it in there, you don't want to be pulling money in and out because there's a lot of cost, transactional cost in doing that. So depending on what happens with the building, if that money wasn't required, and this will all come out of the LTP discussion. Potentially we'd have to look, is there actually surplus there that then our working capital requirements are lower, and potentially long term could more be moved into the long term fund at that point.
Yeah, I mean, does it make sense, even if, you know, the building is to go ahead, which I hope that it does, even in that situation, does it make more sense to do what is being done here at the lower interest scenario, or simply to invest it strategically and borrow if one needs to in the short term? That's a question. Are we optimising? Do you think we're, hand on heart, are we optimising? Can we do better? Because that's a key responsibility.
Our returns through the, given that it's short term as well, the managed fund, it's, you know, we're only investing for up to 12 months because our, you know, the cash requirements do fluctuate. But the returns we've been getting on deposit have been very good, very competitive. The banks are very competitive with term deposit rates because they have quite high requirements.
3.8%.
Yep. So look, we are getting a slightly higher return in the long term fund, but. Yeah, it's a matter of how long that you want to, you're prepared to lock it up for.
Yeah. I look forward to the discussion in LTP. We'll have some discussion on this, yeah?
We will at some point. I can't remember whether that's today's discussion.
No, not today, but the funding of the LTP. Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, some of it is in the financial strategy is some of what we're looking at today.
Thank you.
All right.
Happy to move the recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor.
Thank you for well set out.
Neil, yep. Recommendation is that this report is received. Moved Councillor Neil, seconded Councillor Kempton. No further discussion? Put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Thank you. Documents signed under Council seal. And an update there is her usual procedural. Any questions? I'm happy to move that the report is noted. Is there a seconder? Councillor Deeker, thank you. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. Report back from councillors. Are there any?
Just very briefly, I attended last week the Rural Advisory Group meeting in this room, in fact, with welfare groups, cross-section of organisations, and the presentation by Tony
Martin
about what was happening in terms of developing a New Zealand GIS type regime to support emergency management in general, which was good. And then there was discussions about availability resource. We had City Forests here, talked about they've got machinery, etc., when the crunch happens. And one of the things that popped up was the lack of knowledge about lifestyle block location. That's just a bit of a gap in the knowledge at the moment. So we discussed about how we could rectify that in terms of gaining knowledge.
Good.
Tapping into community boards and that sort of thing.
Yep, thank you. So that's the Rural Advisory Committee is a new... Is it a committee? What's this?
Advisory group.
Group.
Yes.
So it's not a committee, it's a group.
Yep.
Has been put in place to assist the civil defence team. It was seen as a link that was missing, and Councillor Lewin was asked to be a member. Councillor Brown, are you waving your glasses? Are you going
to
report?
Wanting more report? I just want to say I went along to the NOSLAM meeting a couple of weeks ago. They had a community meeting up there. They went to quite a lot of trouble to try and get people to turn out, and there was quite a good crowd. Apparently there were 50 properties represented. So they see the guts of their strategy at this stage is they want to get pod groups going throughout the catchment. So that's what they're working on at this stage, and looking to have further workshops as we go forward.
Good. Great. Councillor Laws.
A few things. I don't usually do this, but it's sort of relevant to what we're going to discuss further. Just that I attended a Guardians of Lake Dunstan meeting, and now I'm a guardian. So it just goes to show, don't turn up to meetings that, they'll give you a job.
You've got two jobs, I think, haven't you?
Yeah, and treasurer. Huge. Probus Cromwell had 120 people there giving their feedback on regional council issues. And that dovetails into the third issue where I met with people from the Peas and Moorings regards rabbits, and hopefully we have an issue when Andrew Noon's up there next week to go and discuss them. It's the peri-urban one, it's where the rubber meets the road. But the third one is that I met with the principal of Mount Aspiring College, and this is where I just wanted to raise this issue now and flag it so that it'll be in the minutes. They're planning for a college of 1,600 pupils, Michael. So they're planning from their role going from its current 1,000, which is what it is at the moment, 1,600 over the next 5 years. They're putting together six classes next year at year seven level. I'm looking at our assumptions from the TA's regards growth, and I'm looking then at the Ministry of Education predictions for both Mount Aspiring College and for Wakatipu College, high school, for Dunstan and for Cromwell College. And I don't know that the TA's figures match the Ministry of Education's future stats. And I'm just flagging that now because the Ministry of Education are expecting growth to be a lot more robust and are planning for such than the TA's have indicated. So I just wanted to flag that now for you.
All right, thank you. No further report back. Councillor
Just
Robertson.
Really briefly, I was interviewed yesterday as an expert, because no one else wanted to do it, I think.
Because the chairman asked you nicely.
Dunedin is a smart city, so a consultant is working for the DCC to think about options into the future, given that we won the Gigatown competition and have ultra-fast broadband. We also received $700,000 as part of that, of which only $300,000 has been spent. So both Peter and I were interviewed, but they were looking, they were very interested actually in regional council and what we were actually doing, which was a lot more than perhaps the portrait was being painted as. But very focused on buses and smart technologies there, and we're right on the button with that now. So people weren't actually aware of that still. And things like emergency management, there was a lot of talk about could we be a bit smarter in the future, is there funding available there as well? stuff like South Dunedin and science, and we were getting quite a lot of feedback from developers and scientific instrument type people, brains around Dunedin about where they felt they could help. it'll be very interesting to see what the project comes out with, I think. But yeah, no, it was good to be involved, and good that the city was engaging the regional council as well. Yeah.
Good. Thank you. Councillor Deacon.
Councillor Robbins has just reminded me that during the coverage of Hurricane Irma hitting Florida, it became obvious that they have some kind of smart arrangement by which the local cellular networks can be overridden by their version of CDEM, which I think is FEMA.
Yep.
And they can come in over the top and pump out messages.
Yes.
Whether people want them or not.
Yep.
They're going to get a message on their mobile phone saying, storm surge coming up your path, get out of there.
Yes.
Did they mention that sort of thing, engaging with Spark and Vodafone and 2 Degrees and getting some sort of override alarm system?
No, they haven't mentioned that, but anything's on the table.
Yeah.
That sounds like a really good idea to me.
So it's we're aware of it nationally.
Yep.
And McDiarm are looking at it, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, if I can, Mr. Chairman, the abject failure of the tsunami warning for the... It was the quake before the real Kaikoura one that woke everybody up. They said, well, we can't use this, the national radio, and you know, because not everybody listens to national radio. So that's where they're heading. Yep, that's where they're heading.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everyone. It's council updates. We'll move on to recommendations adopted at committee meetings. 15.1, the recommendations from the policy committee. Moved,
yep.
Councillor Robertson. Seconded, Councillor Scott. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Agreed. Carried. Recommendations of the Regulatory Committee.
Yep.
Councillor Scott.
Moved.
Thank you. Seconded by...
Sorry.
Councillor Deacre. All in favour, please say aye. Communications Committee.
I'll move and Councillor Hope will second.
Right. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against. Carried. Thank you. Technical Committee. Councillor Noon.
I move, Mr. Chairman.
Seconded, Councillor Bowley. Twitched his ear just at the right time. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Carried. The recommendations from the public portion of the Finance and Corporate Committee.
So
move. Councillor Brown. Seconded, Councillor Noon. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Carried. Thank you. We need to go into publicly excluded for a moment. I'm happy to move that we do for the reasons outlined. Councillor Noon, you happy to second? I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Gary, thank you. All right, so...